This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
DC for you. DC for you. DC for you. DC for you.
In brightest day and in blackest night, here we are again to do another podcast. Because I don't have any of the rest of that rhyme, Todd. I didn't bother coming up with any. An oath for this show, just it doesn't seem like it would be something that fits.
Well, I mean, the only oath that matters is that DC for you, well, okay, at least as far as our show goes, we pledge to bring the listeners the highest quality DC content week after week here on Place to Be Nation Pop. Russell, how are you today?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. We're going to be talking about one of my absolute favorite subjects pretty much throughout this entire month, because it's November, Todd. That means it's Green Lantern month.
Yes, welcome to November. Thanks. Halloween was wonderful. Temperatures are getting a little cooler.
Fire.
Fall is in full swing. The Niners are continuing to dominate. Things are good.
Oh, we hope that's still a true statement. The Falcons are. Yeah, I'm gonna leave that one alone for now. But anyway, we're talking about Green Lantern month all month long. This is, of course, leading into our first season finale, and what better way to end it than on one of the best comics that I think I've ever read in my life, and certainly one of the best comics that most of our friends group have just fallen in love with over the years, and that is Green Lantern Rebirth, which is celebrating its 15th anniversary this year. It started in October of 2004, ran to May of 2005. It was, of course, written by Geoff Johns and illustrated by Ethan Van Sciver. But in any case, there's a laugh on the line because, of course, Todd and I couldn't possibly do this episode without bringing on the guy who introduced me to Green Lantern Rebirth, and that is one half the Hard Traveling Fanboys and possible host of the entity Parallax himself, Mr. Greg Phillips. Greg, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, Russell. I am currently in the throes of Southern Internet, and so we all know the joys of that. So hopefully I can maintain my presence here to enjoy one of my favorite stories of all time as well. A book that was instrumental in my return to comics, Green Lantern Rebirth.
Yeah, it's crazy that it has been 15 years since we've had, Green Lantern Rebirth number one hit shelves and kind of took DC on a wild Green Lantern fueled ride from there. It lasted from 2004 through 2012, I think. 2013, maybe, just whenever
13,
that,
yeah,
when that Geoff Johns Green Lantern run finally came to an end. But it was an incredible ride that started off on a pretty brilliant note. And for the people at home, I think we should each tell us like how we how we came to this. And I can say that I was not personally much of a Green Lantern fan prior to Rebirth. I was aware of Green Lantern thanks to things like Justice League, the animated series, and of course his appearances in some other DC comics that I had seen, but I had never really followed the character so much. So it's not something that I could say that I was like very well versed in before picking up Green Lantern Rebirth. So, Greg, you being our guest, I'd like to know what your history with that was. What was your Green Lantern fandom like prior to Geoff Johns?
You know, I can't say that I was like a diehard Green Lantern fan, but I'd always been fascinated with the character since I was a kid, because he was actually on the cover, he being Hal Jordan, pronouns pal, was on the cover of my very first comic book that I ever bought, which was Superman number 14 by John Byrne. It was Superman and Green Lantern, and they were flying on the cover in front of all these like spheres that looked like a geometry project from high school or something. And for whatever reason, I was just captivated by the idea of this guy that had a ring that could do anything that his imagination told it to, essentially. And so I read some Green Lantern comics when I was a kid during the Gerard Jones run. And, you know, I read, you know, some stuff where he would fight, like, so, I think I read one where he fought Sonar. And, of course, I got into the Reign of the Superman storyline, where Green Lantern played a pretty heavy part in that. And so I was kind of in on the idea of Green Lantern and the Corps, especially when I found out that there were multiple Green Lanterns, and Guy Gardner was a Green Lantern, and he was funny. And so I got into that whole thing, and then I kind of dipped out of the mythos once Kyle Rayner came around, because not because of Kyle Rayner necessarily, but because I kind of stuck my flag in the ground and said, look, the Green Lantern is this concept to me, and so now that you're totally doing away with that concept, I'm no longer interested. And then I read a few Kyle Rayner comics for the next year when I was still reading. Then I dipped out of comics for like 4 or 5 years, and when I came back, I was not exactly thrilled about Kyle Rayner still being Green Lantern and know Hal Jordan as Green Lantern and all this other stuff going on. So the idea, I remember I was reading Batman Hush, I think, or no, it would have probably been the arc after that, when you started seeing the first ads for Green Lantern Rebirth, and it was promising the return of Hal Jordan, and reading online and stuff like that. So I was actually pretty excited about Green Lantern Rebirth coming out, because for me it was a chance to sort of dip my toes back in and maybe see a return to what I had been attracted to when I was a little boy at the comic book store or at the grocery store, seeing the Green Lantern comics on the shelves.
Yeah. Todd, what about you? What was your history with this character prior to the Geoff Johns run?
I had some vague memories of Hal Jordan, Green Lantern, being in Super Friends. He wasn't a regular member, but he was on, say, that one Challenge of the Super Friends season where it was the Super Friends versus the Legion of Doom, and I always remember he had this very unique Superman or superhero voice from that series. I remember some early Green Lantern issues that I would see at like my babysitter's house, but I never read him on a regular basis until the Gerard Jones kind of re-push in the early 90s, and I enjoyed the character well enough, but it was just kind of stale, I guess, after a while to me. I was more into, say, Jon Stewart, because he was the first Green Lantern I really got into during the Crisis, and enjoyed his Mosaic series and, of course, his appearance in Cosmic Odyssey, which, if you haven't read, that's a really important story by Jim Starlin. But I recall trying to think Green Lantern being in, of course, Justice League 200 and some of my other comics, but if I tried to read the actual Green Lantern book, I think I was put off by the Joe Staton art at the time. And so I didn't really read much Green Lantern other than, say, Guy Gardner in both Legends and then Justice League in Justice League International, when he became probably my favorite Green Lantern, as you know, we may talk about later this month. But I was all in for Rebirth because I enjoyed the Hal Jordan's path to redemption in the pages of The Final Night. I don't know if you guys ever read that crossover. And
yes.
then Hal as the Spectre, which was kind of interesting, actually. So it wasn't as bad as we may remember, but it was very short-lived, too.
I believe that Hal actually became the Spectre in a Geoff Johns story, didn't he, in Day of Judgment.
Day of Judgment. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, this was like one of the first things that Geoff Johns ever did for DC Comics.
Yeah.
A story that he himself has even said that he's not really that fond of. But it did kind of set the table for what he would be doing down the road. And, of course, that brings us to Rebirth itself. And this is a 6-issue miniseries. As we said, written by Jeff Johns, illustrated by Ethan Van Sciver. It came out in 2004 and ran to about mid-2005. And is, as we've said, it's the rebirth, put that in air quotes, of the Silver Age Green Lantern, Hal Jordan. And, of course, Kyle Rayner had been the sole Green Lantern for some time. Both John Stewart was still alive, but was not a Green Lantern at the time, and I don't think, anyway. And Guy Gardner was under the guise of Warrior, with the idea that his biology was half alien, half human. Don't ask. It's a whole thing. If you want some more on that, you can go listen to a DC Post-Crisis Management that Greg and I did on Zero Hour. It's weird. But in any case, the basics of it are, we find out through Kyle Rayner that he has discovered that Parallax, which was the name that Hal Jordan took for himself once he kind of flipped and became evil, was actually the name of a living entity that was the living embodiment of fear. It fed on fear and was a very destructive force within the universe. The Guardians of the Universe had imprisoned this entity that was called Parallax inside the Central Power Battery, and is the explanation for where the yellow impurity comes from, why the Green Lantern rings don't work on the color yellow. As the story progresses, it turns out that Parallax is making a move with the assistance from the long-thought-dead Sinestro, who is helping Parallax to reform, to come back out, and to enact ultimate revenge on the Guardians of the Universe. Over the course of this, it's not just Hal Jordan who winds up coming back to life, but kind of the entire concept of the Green Lantern Corps. You have the alien DNA kind of being expunged from Guy Gardner, and him becoming a Green Lantern again. You have John Stewart taking up being a Green Lantern as well. And you have a really cool moment, or several cool moments, where Kyle Rayner gets a lot of shine in this story. So this really doesn't just cover the idea of Hal Jordan coming back. It covers the idea of the four corpsmen really becoming like the best possible versions of themselves. And Jeff Johns writes all of them wonderfully. But in addition to that, it really changes the idea of what the power source for the Green Lantern rings is all about. It brings up the idea of an emotional electromagnetic spectrum, if you will, the various colors of emotion coming into play and being harnessed to create constructs to be basically what the Green Lanterns are, with willpower being the most potent, or just the purest form that can be manipulated by the wearer and doesn't, you know, kind of go the other way around, as most of the other colors on the spectrum have a tendency to maybe wear the user rather than the user wearing them. So, lots to unpack here, but I want to get each of your your impression of that first issue. Greg, what did you think at the start of that? I think you probably maybe read this in single issues, or read it in trade. I read it in trade format the first time, but I think it's divided into chapters, so you can kind of pick out where each issue begins and ends. So, what's your impression of that first issue?
Well, yes, I did read the first issue in single issue form. When this came out, I was in college at Troy University, where I currently work, in full disclosure. And at the time, our campus bookstore began selling comic books, single issue comic books. However, they were always on a delay. They were probably about 2 to 3 months behind when they were actually supposed to come out. Mm-hmm. So we would get these books kind of issues after they'd come out. However, this one was one I was so excited for that I kept waiting, and I kept asking the bookstore people like when they would get this issue in. And so when it came out, I got this issue and I read it, and I didn't know anything about Geoff Johns at that time, or about the artist Ethan Van Sciver. I didn't know who they were or what work they had done before. I just knew that when I read this issue, it felt like one of the most important single issues that I had read in comics, because I had only been back reading for about maybe 2 years at this point whenever Hush started, and I'd stuck with Batman strictly after that. A few Superman issues and Jeff Loeb stuff thrown in, but this was dipping my toes into a whole new world, really, of Green Lantern. I knew that I wasn't a fan of the what they had done a decade earlier with Emerald Twilight, and I was like, how can you possibly fix this? I assumed that this would be the story of Hal Jordan sort of trying to gain, trying to amend for his previous actions, make amends for his previous actions. And instead, what I got was an issue that in one fell swoop manages to please all possible audiences, because a lot of people online at the time were assuming that this was just going to be the end of Kyle Rayner, that they were going to kill Kyle Rayner, because this had been the way that DC had done it in the past, just kill the replacement and bring back the original to take his place, or push the replacement to the side and bring back the original to take his place. And instead, what Johns did in this first issue was made me care about Kyle Rayner for the first time, made me care about Hal and his path for redemption, made me reminding the audience that Hal Jordan was an important character and why he was an important and beloved character. It brought Guy Gardner back to the spotlight, which we'll touch on a little bit later, but I was much like Todd in regards to my relationship with Guy Gardner. And then Jon Stewart, who had been woefully misused, in my opinion, in the years after Emerald Twilight. And it basically is the best example, perhaps, that I can think of completely fixing in continuity through retcons a concept that had been fundamentally broken. So one issue in, I was hooked. Like, I was like, I have got to read the rest of this. And long story short, I ended up getting all of the other single issues except for one, which I did not get until years later because our bookstore was wildly unreliable in its comics department. So I managed to get all of them except for issue, I think it was issue 5 that I was missing out of here. And thankfully, I was able to remedy that many years later. But yeah, first issue right out of the books hooked me in a big, bad way.
That's very, very close to how my experience with it was, because, of course, I read it in trade format. I actually borrowed the hardcover from you sometime later, mm-hmm. and I read it over and over. I think that's probably the book I borrowed from you the most. I just kept doing it over and over and over again, mm-hmm. until I was finally like, you know what, just go buy your own copy of it. And let's stop mooching off other people.
We had a very pay it forward approach to our comics love in those days. One of us would borrow a book, and then we'd let somebody else in the group borrow that book from us. So there are almost 3 degrees of borrowing going on at any given time in our friends group in those days.
It's probably how so many of our books disappeared over the years.
That's true.
But Todd, what was your first impression of that opening issue?
Well, what a great book! All four Lanterns, like we've said, very represented. And again, the greatest retcon of all time. What Geoff Johns does so well is he finds something that's there and he develops it in a way that it makes sense. Like, we, up till this point, we really never had a sufficient answer for the yellow impurity. It's just, it just was kind of a gimmicky thing. And now there's a story reason for it. And not only is there a story reason for it, it also explains why this character who had 50 years, I'm trying to do the math in my head, 30 something years of service as a hero, suddenly went evil, other than, you know, grief and Coast City being destroyed. But that wasn't the case because Geoff Johns fixed it. I mean, this is such an amazing patch job, and there's so many things in the issue that are lovable. You know, you get the rapport between Guy and John, which is very, very enjoyable. You get Carol Ferris. You get also kind of a throwback to the classic Green Lantern origin story with Kyle Rayner crash landing in the desert with a ring, trying to give his ring away, or so it seems. So we also get an explanation for why the Spectre is not representative of Hal's character. So yeah, it's a fantastic, spectacular first issue, but the whole series is to me. So it just grabs you, and what an amazing job that Geoff Johns did. Plus, he sets up Black Hand for years of stories later in this issue, which we didn't even think about that much at the time. It was kind of like, well, here's a lame villain. Spectre cuts his arm off, mm-hmm. And guess what? Towards the end of John's run with Blackest Night, the Black Hand is extremely important. So, just God, what a masterful job Johns did with this.
Yeah, it's that approach that would come to be known as that Johnsian approach to redefining characters, where it was a style of comic book storytelling that I was almost unaccustomed to, because there were all of these things that were happening that at the time didn't feel that important, but I just got the sense that it was laying the grounds for these mysteries that I had a feeling would pay off later if I dove in. And unlike is the case with a lot of comics, I felt like I ultimately got rewarded for my patience and for my intrigue into these mysteries. So really good point there, Todd.
Well, that actually kind of is a good segue into a point that I had thought about getting to a little bit later, but I think we can dive in now, and that's to get you guys' thoughts on the retcon of Parallax and how it reframes the characters of Hal Jordan and the Spectre. Because they don't seem like two characters who would necessarily really go together, but of course Johns did put them together as having Hal Jordan being the new host of the Spectre as kind of a way of him making up for all the horrible things that he did. But as we see in the story of Rebirth, there's more to it than that. There's a real war going on for the soul of Hal Jordan, and the fight is between Parallax and the Spectre. And it's pretty wonderfully illustrated in the issue, and over the course of these several issues, when we finally see the Spectre unleashing its power on Parallax and Hal Jordan kind of stuck there in the middle, which also leads into the explanation for a lot of things about Hal Jordan, not the least of which, like, why he had gray temples. Apparently his aging was part of the Parallax infection. And it was his grief over Coast City that really allowed Parallax to, like, get his hooks into Hal Jordan in the first place, because he was overcome with all sorts of other emotions, including fear, after the destruction of Coast City. And that's when Parallax was able to truly take hold and warp him to being something that he wasn't. So in a way, this issue, or not just the issue, but the story, frames it as the things that Hal Jordan did weren't necessarily his fault, because he was under the influence of this parasitic entity. So what do you guys think about the reframing of the events of Emerald Twilight in that light? Does it make you look at that story differently, maybe, if you reframe it that way, Greg?
Brilliant is the way I would describe it. It was a brilliant retcon, because it pretty much fixed it undid what I thought was a character assassination, almost on an unprecedented level for a major superhero at a company like Marvel or DC, where very rarely had we seen one of the top tier heroes in the company not just go bad for a story arc, or just go bad as a natural turn, but sort of suddenly turn on a dime into a megalomaniacal universe destroying threat, where he was willing to literally destroy the universe and remake it in his image. And so I really thought this was, as Todd pointed out, the best example I can think of rehabilitating a continuity that had not served its characters well, while not undoing that continuity. Because the easy thing to do would be just to reboot the Green Lantern Corps from the beginning, do all the characters over again from start. But instead, John said, no, let me take what there is, let me add some little twists into it, and I can fix it. I can get us back to a place where all these characters are being served, all of our fans are being served, and we're getting back to the core, so to speak, of what the Green Lantern concept is. And I feel like that's what happened here. Rather than take the easy way out, John's used creative retcons that fixed Hal Jordan, fixed the Green Lantern Corps, and kind of undid an editorial mandate from a decade earlier that seemed to have permanently destroyed a character in Hal Jordan. So I got to say, in my book, this is the best retcon ever.
It's hard to really argue that for me, because I see this pretty much the same way that you do, Greg. I think that this is exactly what needed to happen for this character. John's idea of don't throw the baby out with the bathwater really does work so well here, and it's something that I think a lot of writers who want to kind of reclaim certain characters could, you know, take a big bunch of notes from, and it would make their writings better. So, Todd, what did you think of this retcon? Is it the greatest retcon of all time?
Yeah, I can't think of another that holds a torch to it. Holds a candle. There we go. There's nothing that compares as far as a reclamation project, because he took something that a lot of people were upset about. There were other younger fans that it didn't affect them, because to them Hal Jordan was kind of boring. And it made pretty much everybody happy, I would think. I mean, we all thought that Kyle Rayner was going to be a goner here. And of course not. He's not. He's reframed and able to use his character strengths in a new way, which is very, very well done as well. And I think everybody would have to be who felt betrayed by Jordan turning evil or being told to be evil by editors. That this completely satisfies and gives a credible explanation for it. Doesn't take away the events that happened. Instead, turns it into interesting character development for Hal. And we get to really see why Hal was actually a great hero throughout. He just was at a weak point and got taken over by this entity. And Johns uses that to set up years and years of stories with the emotional spectrum and Parallax.
Yeah, it's perfect. It really is exactly what this character needed. What this character needed years ago, but you know, better late than never. Johns came along and gave the character exactly the boost that he really needed, and all great points. And I also love that. While the expectation did seem to be that Kyle Rayner wasn't going to be around anymore, Johns even flips that on its head and says, no, I'm going to make Kyle Rayner into a character that people can care about. Oh, and I'm going to reestablish Guy Gardner and John Stewart while reminding people why they loved them in the first place.
Right. And I thought the other thing that this retcon brilliantly did was it set up these four pillars of the Green Lantern Corps from Earth, and it established why each of them is important, why each of them matters, and why each of them is unique. There's a tendency in comics sometimes in team concepts. I always hate it when the characters are too similar to one another. I like contrasts in personality. I like contrasts in style. And that's what we get here with these four. They are four individual, unique personalities who each serve a valuable are valuable cogs in the wheel of the Green Lantern Corps, and that's really what sparked my imagination at the time. I was a big fan of the Lord of the Rings movies at that time, and big fan of, you know, Star Wars and all that. And so these unique, powerful characterizations of this grand mythos that seemed to have so many unique species and characters to uncover, and the fact that we had these four Earthlings that could be standouts in a crowd that included a living planet and whatever Kilowog is. So, you know, it's incredible.
Kilowog's return scene in this series was really great, as there were so many. But I think one of the things that really hooked me, or at least as like favorite scenes, was a moment between Kyle Rayner and Oliver Queen, the Green Arrow. Hal had actually left his ring with Oliver Queen at one point,
yeah,
just for keeping. And of course, when Sinestro is revealed to be the villain who's kind of the architect of all the crazy things that have been happening over the course of this story, Oliver does attempt to use the ring himself, and of course, it's really, really difficult. But he does pull it off at least once, forming a will-powered arrow that he fires off from the ring, and it feels like it nearly takes his hand off. And of course, he winds up being saved by Kyle Rayner in this situation. And as they're leaving, he asks Kyle, "Is it that difficult every time you try to make a construct?" And Kyle tells him, "Yes, that's how it feels every single time. It requires lots of practice and lots of focus in order to manifest willpower in such a way." And to me, that reframed the power set of the Green Lantern and the way that they operated in this whole new light, if you'll pardon the pun. And it really intrigued me to the point where I had to know so much more about this mythos and about where these characters come from. And it's just one of my all-time favorite scenes. That and John Stewart really dressing Batman down and telling him just how much of a piece of shit he kind of is at times. That is just one of the greatest moments in all of comics for me. So, but before we take a break, I want to know who each of your favorite Green Lanterns was before and after you read Rebirth. So, Greg, who was your favorite before and after?
I think before Rebirth, my favorite was it was a push between Hal and Guy. I think I probably would have said Guy Gardner before Rebirth because Death of Superman and all that. I was a big fan of the obnoxious comedic Guy Gardner from back in the day. And so I probably would have said him. And after Rebirth, I don't think I could have said anything except Hal Jordan. He was my favorite Green Lantern coming out of Rebirth. And it also gave me a new appreciation for John Stewart, a character I had never really encountered in the comics. He never made appearances seemingly in the books that I read when I was a kid, and I mainly only knew him from the Justice League cartoon, where I was a big fan. And then Kyle, it actually made me appreciate Kyle for the first time. So, but yeah, I would say coming out of this, Jordan was my favorite, and before Guy was my favorite.
Prior to it, I would definitely go John Stewart because of most of the Justice League cartoon. He was the Green Lantern I was most aware of. Really loved his character there. Loved, still do to this day. I think he's one of my absolute favorite characters in comics. And of course, afterwards, it's hard not to say Hal Jordan because Hal is portrayed so well in this story. I mean, it's one of the greatest character reclamations of all time. And it reminds you why Hal Jordan is inspirational. There's a scene between he and Kyle Rayner near the end of the book when Kyle is kind of listing off why John and Guy and, of course, Hal are really great Green Lanterns. But he's like, you guys were chosen by the rings, and I was just picked because I was the first person that Gantt found, and never really felt like, and as far as the concept of the core goes, that he really belonged as a Green Lantern. And Hal reminds him that throughout this entire story is like, you've been fighting Sinestro and Parallax, you've been standing toe to toe with them, you've been overcoming fear and stepping up as a hero, and if that's not earning it, I don't know what is. That kind of lights that fire back in Kyle, and he's like, oh, maybe I do belong here after all. If Hal Jordan, the greatest Green Lantern of all time, is signing off on me, then maybe I really should be wearing this ring. And to me, I was like, that's what Hal Jordan can be. He can be that inspiring character, that inspiring voice for those who feel like they're maybe not quite up to par. And to me, I think that that's one of the greatest things that Geoff Johns did with the character. So, Todd, who was your favorite before and after?
I kind of echo Greg, because the way that Guy Gardner was written in Justice League International, Keith Giffen, J.M. DeMatteis, there it is, was one of the most entertaining characters I've ever read. And it was just such a constant presence. But he had been broken, or at least unreadable to me, for, at the time of this, about 10 years. You know, I didn't like any of the Voldarian warrior stuff, and even him with Sinestro's ring didn't quite do it for me. But coming out of Rebirth, it is Hal. I mean, he's set up beautifully. You can tell Johns really has an affinity for him, and we get to discover a lot of the things that make him different as a character. He stands out, has his own voice. He's more of an inspirational person. And, you even see how Guy Gardner treats him with respect after this, that previously was kind of very reluctant. You know, I think it's hard to not say Hal is your favorite after coming out of this.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard not to look at Hal Jordan as the greatest Green Lantern of all time once you've gotten to the end of Rebirth. But with that, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about the ongoing legacy of Green Lantern Rebirth, how it's still interwoven into DC continuity to this day, our thoughts on some of the other stories that Geoff Johns wrote, and who might even be Johns' equal, if there is even anyone on the Green Lantern main title. So with that, we will be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
What's up, Place to Be Nation? It's the manager, Todd Weber, here to tell you all about the stuff going on at PlaceToBeNation.com. First up, we've got the Place to Be Nation pop feed, on which you are listening to this episode of Marvel Age. Last week, Scott Criscolo and Jennifer Smith wrapped up October and our month-long tribute to Halloween with What a Scream, the History of Horror in America special. Every week, Hard Traveling Fanboys come in and they talk about comics. This week, they're back with the latest edition of Fix It or Nix It. They talk about Josh Trank's controversial 2015 movie, Fantastic Four. We've also got DC For You every week talking about DC Comics. Russell and Todd talked about October's news and notes. This Week in the NFL hits every single week. Roger and Johnny talking about the 49ers being the only remaining undefeated team. Hopefully, by the time you read this or listen to this, they will still be such. Also have every Monday, Brother Sister Rewatch podcast. Kevin and Mary, they are brother and sister, and they are looking at The Office. They are Office Season 3, Episodes 17 and 18, including Cocktails and the Negotiation. Negotiation. Is that a word? That's the word. On the latest episode of The Great Debate, Andy Atherton had Nate Milton, Peter Winson, and Matt Souza talking about a bunch of stuff in sports and pop culture. Also, weekly Diamond Conversations hits. Host Chad B. talks about different things in baseball, different topics, different guests. This week he had Chris Donnelly talking about the 1985 Mets, Doc Gooden, Daryl Strawberry, et al. On the latest episode of Laughing Theater, Andy Atherton's joined by Miranda Berthold to live watch the 1988 Tim Burton classic Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. And oh, look, he just popped up. Greatest sitcom of all time tournament starting soon on our Facebook page. Go to Place to Be Nation's Greatest Sitcom of All Time Tournament, and you will be able to vote every single day. It's happening very soon. Over on our wrestling feed of podcasts, we've got Where the Big Boys Play, classic episode, Parv, Nima Parvini, and Chad Campbell delivered a review of the Great American Bash 1988 on Where the Big Boys Play. Row 1, Seat 1, Ben Zanny hosts JT Rizzero talking about his history as a wrestling fan and the founding and growth of Place to Be Nation. Our newest show, With This Ring, we've got a husband and wife team, Ryan and Cindy, looking at 5 matches and discussing where they place in Ryan's GWWE match list, as well as Cindy's personal list of favorite wrestling matches. Also had the latest edition of the Gold Standard Mothership Place to Be podcast. JT and Scott delivered their 9th annual Halloween Spooktacular. They talked about the Netflix Marvel Universe, and then they were joined to talk boxing with Roger Morissette, Andy Atherton, and Matt Souza, watching the famous upset match of Buster Douglas versus Mike Tyson. I believe it was the upset. Might have been the, it was the upset. It wasn't, it was the only time they fought. Anyway, I'm rambling. On the latest episode of PTBN Extreme Three-Way Dance, JT, John, and Jenny continue their ECW adventure with 3 episodes of ECW Hardcore TV from June 1994. Check out PlaceToBeNation.com every single day. We've got weekly columns, including Campus Hot Takes and Glenn's Weekly Walk. There's always something new up there. I know. I'm an administrator for that site. If you're shopping over at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner at the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon, and it takes you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN with no cost to you. All right, now, back to the show.
Welcome back to our celebration of Green Lantern Rebirth's 15th anniversary. God, it has been 15 years. Does anybody else feel old, or is that just my back?
Stop.
No. Well,
somebody say old.
Our old is here. I love it. Also, my back is here. That's awesome. That's what I really need a Green Lantern ring for, is to constantly reinforce my spine so that my shitty mattress doesn't continue deteriorating me into old age too early. But I digress. That's a whole other bag of cats. We, of course, have been talking at length about the greatest character reclamation project in probably all of comics, with Hal Jordan and Green Lantern Rebirth. And now we want to talk about how the GL Rebirth legacy, how it's continuing to affect the DC legacy 15 years after the fact. So, Greg, you and I, Todd, as well, all 3 of us have been reading DC Comics pretty continuously for a good long while. And when you think about it, from 2004 to today, that's a good chunk of time to be following a single continuity. So in your observations, how do you see Green Lantern Rebirth continuing to affect the DC legacy after these past 15 years? Greg, we'll start with you.
I think it's twofold. I think the most obvious way to look at the influence of the story that continues to be felt is in the prominence of Green Lantern in DC Comics. For a long time after this book, it's easily forgotten because it's been so long now, but there was a time when Green Lantern was DC's most successful title. And it was directly as a result of Rebirth and the Sinestro Corps War and all the great work that went into that series. There was a time when Green Lantern, not Superman, not Batman, not even Wonder Woman, not even Justice League, was DC's top-selling monthly comic book, which is incredible to think about. Now, we're a long way removed from that at this point, but it hasn't changed the fact that Green Lantern has a prominent presence in DC across the board, whether it be I think there are multiple Justice League books with different Green Lanterns in them right now. We've had there was a period just a couple years ago where we had three or four titles related to Green Lantern in a given month. And I think that 20 years ago, you never would have seen that before Green Lantern Rebirth. Kyle Rayner was off in his little corner. He was in Justice League. You certainly would not have seen an A-list level creator like a Grant Morrison get a prominently promoted relaunch of a title with Green Lantern back in those days. It's changed his prominence. But I think the other and kind of more influential impact is the Geoff Johns factor. Because this book, more so even than what he was doing on The Flash, elevated Geoff Johns to the A-list of creators. He was already a very up-and-coming, popular young creator, but this was his moment that sort of elevated him to the top tier of recognition and respect and credibility, and he became a summer blockbuster guy, right? He became the guy that DC could turn to when they needed a big event. And you, that name Rebirth, we saw it with the Flash Rebirth a few years later. We saw it with the Rebirth Initiative, the DC Universe Rebirth. Who did they turn to write this? It was Geoff Johns. Who did they turn to sort of redefine Aquaman for a modern era? It was Geoff Johns. Who did they turn to redefine the Justice League for a modern era? It was Geoff Johns. Teen Titans, Geoff Johns, and on down the line. And it really goes back to and relates to what he did with Rebirth. He showed that he is the guy that can take existing stale properties and reinvigorate them and reimagine them in a modern era while still not losing track of their roots. So I think that even more so than what he did for Green Lantern and Hal Jordan and the Corps and all that stuff, I think what he meant to DC Comics is that he is that guy who has more love for their company than perhaps anyone else that's ever written for them, or at least in the modern era, and knows how to get comics back on track when they've gone awry. And granted, he's not like anybody. He's not pitching he's not batting 1,000, but his batting average, I would suggest, is higher than virtually anyone else in that regard.
I would have to agree with every bit of that. His legacy is really the legacy of Green Lantern Rebirth. That was the moment that really broke him through. And I think it also shows you that the character picks the writer, not so much the other way around, because Green Lantern was that character that probably nobody really wanted to touch at that point. He wasn't somebody that everybody was just clamoring to get their hands on. And here's Geoff Johns pitching an idea that he was given, enough room, enough latitude to actually just run with. And he completely redefined the mythology of what the character is, and now his version of the character, his redefining of that mythology, is now the understood classic form of that mythology. That is incredibly rare for a writer to be able to come along and do something like that, like to pitch an idea that fundamentally changes everything and fundamentally changes the understanding of a character to the audience.
How many times have we seen that tried with Superman over the years,
Countless.
and it always tends to revert back to what has always been classic. And this is a case where it didn't. It sort of – this is the new reality for this character.
If anything, well, it evolved from here instead of ever reverting back. Like even looking at all the things that have changed over the years for many a character, like Superman, Batman – I would say maybe Wonder Woman has experienced something like this when George Perez and Len Wein were writing her title back in the mid-80s. I think that they have their redefinition of a character was something similar to this, but I think John's winds up becoming a much grander scale because it affects the whole wider DC universe and the work that's done on it, as you pointed out, as you alluded to there, Greg, with the 2016 Rebirth initiative, is kind of the ultimate culmination of what Geoff Johns starts in 2004. The idea of rebirthing the characters, which is to say rehabbing them in a way that does not throw out the things that were done, but says, let me take what was done and let me rebuild on it with some classic elements and then adding in some new ideas to allow these characters to build up into a somewhat new form that still looks recognizable to those who knew them before, but attracts new readers. And that's something that Green Lantern Rebirth most certainly did, at least from my perspective, because I didn't really care that much about Green Lantern before Rebirth came along. And since Rebirth, there are a few characters that I care about more. So that's beyond the pale of even Geoff Johns, because his run came to an end, and yet I still care about what's happening with Hal Jordan, with Jon Stewart, Guy Gardner, with Kyle Rayner. And even the new Lanterns that were introduced by Johns, characters like Larflees, characters like his adjusting of Atrocitus of the five inversions, his full like character redefining of Sinestro, which took Sinestro from a mustache twirling, evil for its own sake type villain to one whose motivations of personal slights and revenge make so much more sense and make him not necessarily a sympathetic character, but someone whose point of view you will fully understand and maybe even embrace, because like all great villains, he's a villain with a point, and Geoff Johns gave him that point. And you also mentioned Flash Rebirth. Again, just a couple of years after this one, right around the time of Blackest Night, Geoff Johns steps up and takes the resurrected Barry Allen out of Grant Morrison's hands and says, all right, I'm going to reposition this character in a way that makes him fit for the modern era. And if you go and read Flash Rebirth and then go watch the first episode of the CW's Flash, you're going to see how Geoff Johns' ideas are being played out right there and how they are, again, becoming the new normal. So the legacy of Rebirth just continues to unfold, and it feels like it has really influenced a lot of writers who've come into DC ever since. They can look back at that as a roadmap of how to make these characters work in the modern era without having to completely start over. And that, I think, is the greatest testament to its brilliance. So, Todd, you were jumping in there for a second. What were you going to say?
Well, I mean, Rebirth, we did it with Green Lantern. Johns did it with Flash. And then he did it with the entire post-Flashpoint, you know, New 52 universe. I think, you know, you can even look at Shazam as being the same kind of concept. At least the if you read the Shazam backups from the New 52 Justice League as a trade or as a collection, it's streamlining, defining what works for the character, giving them and giving future writers opportunities to mine. You know, it's a gift for later writers, but what he's doing is getting these characters to their core, but still respecting their legacies. And so many of DC's fans love DC because of their legacies, because of the 70, 80 years of history of these characters, and that you can still point back in that direction. And I think Johns has done it the best. And even though Green Lantern itself is kind of something that most of my friends are ignoring, although it's got really pretty art, it's not going to be taken too far off the rails because of the work that Johns has already put in. We'll be able to kind of get back on track when we get somebody who is not Grant Morrison doing his own Silver Age homages there.
All fair points. I I can't say that I'm a huge fan of what Morrison is doing there, but like you said, that Liam Sharp art is absolutely stunning. It's one of those, it's like, wow, this is maybe one of the best looking Green Lantern books ever. Just because the sheer level of detail that Liam Sharp puts into it. So he's, you know, Green Lantern has a history of attracting great artists to the book, because especially with a spacefaring adventure like this, if you're an artist who really wants to like flex a muscle and have like a large scope, for which to tell your story, it's hard to imagine one bigger than the whole of space.
Yeah, his style of art on Green Lantern reminds me a lot of Dave Gibbons back in the 80s art on Green Lantern. Very, very similar sort of aesthetics, I think, to that whole ability to put all these different weird alien creatures on a page at one time. Really cool.
Yeah, he's absolutely fantastic, and that's a good segue for a question I wanted to ask you guys. I don't think any one of us are necessarily all that high on the current Grant Morrison run. Not to say that it's bad, it's just not necessarily a for us kind of thing. But is there anyone that you would say is as good or better than Johns as a GL writer? And I mean that before Jeff Johns and since. Todd, I'll start with you. Is there anybody that you think is equal to Jeff Johns?
Alan Moore in his very, very brief appearances on the book, you know, or in the Tales of the Core annuals, yeah. Those short stories. That's about it. There have been many other good writers. I like the work Judd Winnick did with Kyle Rayner, certainly good. Going back to Denny O'Neill and the Hard Traveling Heroes, very good for its time, very important. But come on, Jeff Johns is the state-of-the-art writer for Green Lantern. I can't. And other guys have done nice jobs. Venditti, was that his name? That, yes. That was still very good comics. And kind of picked up on the threads, followed through, and kept the consistent characterization of Hal to Johns' version. And that was very important. So it is possible that somebody else will come and raise it to another level, but nobody has touched Jeff Johns before or since to me.
I would echo all of that. I think all of the writers you mentioned are really great. I would say that after Jeff Johns, that Robert Venditti run started off okay and then kind of went off the rails a bit thanks to editorial mandates. But,
yep.
But once Rebirth hit in 2016 and the book morphed into Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, it was basically Robert Venditti plays Jeff Johns' greatest hits. And he did it real well. The book was consistently great. He followed up on some ideas that Johns had introduced, but maybe hadn't fully fleshed out. And he even played around with some of his own ideas from his previous run prior to Rebirth, and made them seem better than what they were framed as in that context. So that Robert Venditti run ultimately winds up as a pretty big win to me. And like you, I love those Alan Moore stories. Mogo Doesn't Socialize is one of the greatest Green Lantern stories of all time, if you haven't read it.
Yeah, Tigers, too, the other one.
Yep.
Those two. That's the one. Those are the ones people talk about.
And for good reason. They're very, very good. And good standalone stories. Like, you can just read those in their own context. And
also the one that introduced F Sharp Bell. That's a great story, too.
And with that, Greg, who's living up to Johns' standard before or since him?
Johns is the GOAT. He's the greatest of all time Green Lantern writer. So nobody really compares for me. Alan Moore is a great choice. I love that choice because really he laid a lot of the building blocks for things that Johns took and ran with many, many years later. Alan Moore is just an amazing writer in general. So yeah, his Green Lantern stuff stands out. I don't want to dismiss any of the great writers like Steve Englehart had a run on Green Lantern, a little up and down, but some good stuff in there. I don't want to dismiss, you know, personal, not personal issues aside, Gerard Jones was a good Green Lantern writer. But the only other name that comes to my mind as being on par with Johns is actually the guy that kind of was his cohort for a lot of this, and that was Peter Tomasi.
Writing
Green Lantern Corps. I think that sometimes in our love of the Geoff Johns run, we forget how vital and how tied together everything was, and half of that was the Green Lantern Corps book by Peter Tomasi, which was sensational. That's where we really got to see the further development of Kyle Rayner, the further development of John Stewart, the further development of Guy Gardner, the introduction of Soren Ignatiu and characters like that became huge parts of the Green Lantern lore. And so I would say Tomasi would probably be my number two behind Johns, and then of course Alan Moore as sort of a 1A because he didn't have a long run on the character. But yeah, Tomasi deserves a lot of credit because he was John's partner in crime on this whole thing and did a lot of terrific work that unfortunately kind of got overshadowed because of the big event books, but his stuff was just spectacular.
I would absolutely agree with that, and I would also say Peter Tomasi's right-hand man in all that was Patrick Gleason.
Yes.
And he wound up really being like a co-writer on a lot of these books, kind of an unsung co-writer, as well as the artist on Green Lantern Corps, and it is some tremendous stuff. But with that, let's... we had alluded to Green Lantern Secret Origin in the first half. So that's a really good story arc that that kind of comes in kind of in the middle of Geoff Johns' run. He kind of stops the forward progress on the main book for a little bit to back up and tell the newly retconned origin of Hal Jordan, which is now the understood, accepted origin story for the character. And there's a lot of references in Secret Origin to things that he had already introduced in his Green Lantern run. So I wanted to ask you guys, do you think that if someone were, say, a new fan, somebody who's never read Green Lantern before, would you put Rebirth in their hands or would you put Secret Origin in their hands? Greg, go with you.
We've actually wrestled with this question before amongst ourselves.
Yes.
Before you and I and Nick and some of the other ones in our group have had this discussion before, and honestly, it's a debate that I've never really fully settled in my mind. I think that what I'm going to come down to today, and I reserve the right to change my mind later, is I would say that if you have no knowledge of the Green Lantern at all, if you don't know anything about Hal Jordan, if you don't know anything about the Green Lantern Corps, I would say Secret Origin is the way to go because it is a clean, fresh, you know, it could be the script for a movie. It probably should have been the script for a movie. But that's another story for another time. And I would say Secret Origin is probably the way to go if you've never experienced the character before, give you a crash course in who and what everybody is. Then you can kind of maybe go back and read from the beginning, the run. However, if you have even a cursory knowledge, and I've realized this because for many years I said, well, you want to start with Secret Origin because Rebirth has a lot of continuity stuff in it. And I realized it never bothered me, and I hadn't read comics regularly for 10, you know, 5 years at that point, at least Green Lantern comics for probably 10 years. So I would say if you have knowledge, if you know who Hal Jordan is, you know he was a fighter pilot and all that stuff, if you know the basic idea of – you know, what the Green Lantern Corps is, and some of the character names and things of that nature, I would say go right into Rebirth because it does a pretty good job in that first issue of setting up the status quo for everybody and then disrupting that status quo. So I guess the short answer to the long answer would be Rebirth for most people that are going to be willing to give this a try. Secret Origin for somebody who is a DC outsider and has never experienced the character in any media in any form at all. But yeah, I think Rebirth actually does work pretty damn well as an intro to everything that's going to come later.
Todd?
Well, I'm going to say you guys are both wrong. And even though it wasn't one of the choices,
Oh, wait, we're only selecting between Jeff Johns books. I was going to say New Frontier is still the best Green Lantern story.
Also a good one.
We shouldn't discount it, but it's very unique. It's its own project. I agree with Greg. I think Rebirth sets the stage and does a better job of kind of defining and introducing everything, and that sets up Secret Origin to have more of an impact as you read it later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think looking at that, it's like, well, I want to watch Star Wars. Let me watch the prequels first. No, don't do it that way. You should watch episode 3, 4, and then 1, 2, and 3, and then 5. You know what I mean?
The machete order. Yes.
Yeah. That's, I didn't get that exactly right, but you know what I'm saying?
I do.
These things, the way they come out, in over the course of time have more impact to you if certain elements are revealed as the writer into
right.
Yeah, so I agree with Greg that I think Rebirth is fine to start with, and you know it's top notch. Although Ivan Reis, great artist as well.
Yes, Ivan Reis is probably my favorite GL artist overall. I think that there's almost nobody that did it better. His work on Blackest Night is just mind blowingly good, and Secret Origin. Like he drew all of that, and it's gorgeous. For me, I think it depends on where you fall on the spectrum, if you will, for Green Lantern interest. Are you more interested in Hal Jordan, like a singular Green Lantern character, or are you more interested in the larger concepts and the core? If you are interested in the larger concepts and the core and what makes each of these characters who they are, I don't think there's any better place to start than Green Lantern Rebirth. I think you pick up there, and it will give you that crash course in everything you need to know, and we'll say, okay, here's a look at what the old status quo was. Now forget that. We're introducing you to the new one. And in that, you'll be on the same footing as any experienced Green Lantern fan coming into it. So everybody kind of gets to start from the same mm-hmm. point. With Secret Origin, if you are just interested in Hal Jordan as a character, like from his humble beginnings to being the intergalactic space cop that he ultimately becomes, you can pick up Secret Origin. But keep in mind, some of the concepts involved in Secret Origin are really not going to have the same kind of emotional impact with you as they would if you had started with Rebirth and had gone on from there to read Jeff Johns' ongoing Green Lantern run, because he introduces these concepts all along and gets you invested in them and then shows you their beginning, and it gives you kind of this aha moment when you're reading Secret Origin, especially as it concerns Abin Sur and Atrocitus.
When you're done, I have a thing to an addendum.
Okay.
We haven't talked about it, but did you know that Rebirth is not the first Jeff Johns story? And I was thinking of this when I said New Frontier. Jeff wrote a prelude or a story with Darwin Cook on art for Green Lantern Secret Files and Origins.
Yep.
I don't know if
yep.
you guys have seen that. That is what I would put in people's hands if I could first, because it kind of... It's somewhat of an origin, something of a recap, but that's it's magic.
It's really
forgot
good.
All about it.
Yeah.
It's included in the original trade that I have of Green Lantern No Fear, I believe, the first volume of the Johns Green Lantern run, and it's I actually went out. I love it so much. I actually scour. I don't do a lot of back issue hunting, but I actually about four or five years ago. Specifically sought out that issue at various comic shops, and I found it at a shop in Columbus, actually, where Nick lives, and was able to get my hands on that issue. So it's now in my collection. Very good issue.
Green Lantern Secret Files and Origins from 2005.
Yep.
I mean, Jeff Johns and Darwin Cook together, yeah, you should go read that anyway.
Yeah.
Just because that's a powerhouse that, man... What we wouldn't give for Darwin to still be here.
Yeah.
But with that, we don't want to end on a sad note, because we want to talk about where do fans need to go next. Let's say you've picked up DC or you've picked up Green Lantern Rebirth. You liked it. You enjoyed what you read. You want to know where it is you should go next. And I think the answer is pretty obvious. You should pick up that first trade that Greg talked about, Green Lantern, Volume 1, No Fear. Or if you're really invested and you really loved what you read, you can go get you that Green Lantern by Geoff Johns, Omnibus, number one, Volume 1. And that's going to take you all the way through the Sinestro Corps War. Although it will unfortunately skip, I think, some issues of Peter Tomasi's Green Lantern Corps. But if you want to get into individual trades, or if you are subscribed to the wonderful DC Universe app, you can read Geoff Johns' Green Lantern Rebirth, and then you can jump right into his run, and you can also read Green Lantern Corps Recharge that was written by Dave Gibbons. It is a wonderful restarting of the Green Lantern Corps and is going to set the stage for Peter Tomasi's ongoing Green Lantern Corps book. Those two I would highly recommend getting into. They are absolutely incredible. And of course, there is another big event in the Sinestro Corps War coming just down the road, and it is considered one of the all-time greatest comic book events of all time, and for good reason. So that would be my suggestion. Greg, where else should the people go?
I echo those thoughts. I think if you get into DC Universe, just read the entire Geoff Johns Green Lantern run from beginning to end. They have all of it on there. I believe they've added all the Gibbons and Tomasi Green Lantern Corps. I would follow all of those in order. If you do buy the trade of a No Fear, you get a wonderful Carlos Pacheco art as well on that, which is he's kind of unsung in the Geoff Johns run because Ivan Reiss eventually came over and became the predominant Green Lantern artist, but Pacheco did some great work in those early issues. The Sinestro Corps War, Nick and I talked about on our show, agreed unanimously it's the greatest Green Lantern story of all time.
It is.
It's amazing on its own, but you really want to read all the build up to it, because it is something that if you've read the build up that takes place over the course of the better part of 2 years, it's one of those events that stands out in comics as truly delivering on its promise and leaving you wanting more. And of course, you got Blackest Night, another predominant Green Lantern event. If you like this style from Geoff Johns of his style of Green Lantern, and I think trying to think of other examples beyond that. If you really enjoyed Rebirth, you might pick up here's a suggestion for you that probably isn't the individual issues may or may not be on DC Universe yet, but go and pick up the DC Universe Stories of Alan Moore. It's a trade collection, one of my favorites in my collection, actually, of a lot of his main DC Universe stuff from the 80s, and read his Green Lantern stories, and then it's kind of a fun exercise to read these stories and then go and reread Rebirth and see how his stories influenced this amazing reboot that we've just witnessed from Geoff Johns of the Green Lantern concept and kind of the things that he picked and chose from those Alan Moore stories. So I would say Geoff Johns run, Gibbons Tomasi run, and then go back and read the Alan Moore stuff to give you a little more context on things.
Excellent suggestions. Everybody should for sure go do that. But first, Todd, where else did they need to go?
They need to go to DCUniverse.com and become members, because that's probably the cheapest way to get into all these comics.
Yeah.
Or see what your library has, because there's a lot out there. But if you read Green Lantern by Geoff Johns, now be careful, check the date, because there are several Green Lantern number ones by Geoff Johns. There's the New 52, there's the pre-New 52. I believe you have to be careful, because it's not necessarily clear. I guess if you were going out and buying it for the first time, That's all I'm saying.
Right, and if you start with the New 52 number one, it's a good, really good story, but it doesn't
Sinestro's
make any
on the cover.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense if you're reading it out of context because it's the continuation of the story from the previous whatever it was, 70 issues or 56 issues, whatever it was.
Yeah, it's I believe it starts in is 2011, so it'll be listed as Green Lantern 2011 on DC Universe, whereas the first run of John's Green Lantern run will be called Green Lantern 2005. So you're,
right.
You'll see a year difference there, but Green Lantern Rebirth is totally its own thing because it is a miniseries. You can pick right up into that, and then of course go over to the 2005 run and just go forward. Just remember that. With things like Sinestro Corps War, it took place in the pages of Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps. So the parts will bounce back and forth with each other when you get there. But you honestly should be reading both of those books anyway, and you'll want to because they're both, I would say, just about equally good.
A cool thing to do, and I don't know if they've done it yet on DC Universe, a cool thing for them to do would be to allow you to organize the books in the reading order that they came out originally. You could cycle between, kind of like how we did back in the day, cycle between these stories as they're going on. And particularly when it gets to time for the events, Sinestro Corps War, Blackest Night, etc., War of the Green Lanterns, whatever it may be, seeing how the books interact with one another and inform one another is really cool.
I absolutely love doing that back in the day, man. It was so much fun getting it because I was trade waiting for the longest time with Green Lantern and with Core. But the trades would come out almost right on top of each other. Like they were on a really consistent schedule, so it was easy to just like pick one up as soon as it was coming out, read through it, and be like, all right, I unfortunately read that all in one sitting, and now I have to wait about a month for the next one to drop. But yeah, that's funny how I look at it, you know, look back on it now and think, wow, I'm reading month to month single issues. And I used to worry about that kind of thing when I was picking up trades. Dear God, I had no idea. But it's the life you choose whenever you get into comics. But then you get stuff like this, like that Geoff Johns Green Lantern run. And any frustrations that you might have had with it before or even since kind of melt away whenever you just get lost in the just amazing tapestry of this story.
Yeah, like it's funny how when you know, I'm the same way where you can think, man, this is such a time suck and it's such a money suck. And then you make an emotional investment in a story that makes it all worth it.
It does. And this is the all-timer. I think this has to be top three. Comic book runs of all time, multiple like great classic events from Sinestro Corps War to Blackest Night. And even for my money, I like Brightest Day a lot. I thought that was a great
arc. It's fantastic.
Yeah. It's a great arc. It's a great miniseries in its own right. It made me appreciate characters like Deadman and I never thought I would do that. But with that, we have gushed and we have once again verbally filleted Green Lantern Rebirth into oblivion. It should be more than sated for the next who knows? We'll come back and do it again in like a month or something. Who knows? it's what we do. We can't help ourselves but reference this book. But there's a reason for it. It's because it is that good, and it is one that I think serves as a great jumping on point for new readers. It could make you a comics fan. It could make you a fan of the medium. I think that's the power of this story, I think. I think if you pick it up, you'll just read through it and be like, wow, I had no idea that superhero comics could do really cool stuff like this, or they could just be this much fun and so engaging, so engrossing, like character-driven, big blockbuster-style action. There's really nothing more that you could ask for from a good superhero book. So once you're done listening to this, if you haven't already, just shut us off and go get on DC Universe and read the book. It's going to be well worth your time. In fact, it's not even going to take you that long to read it. First time I sat down with Green Lantern Rebirth, I was done with it. Probably about an hour. I mean, I read through it really fast because it was just a page turner. Like you're just burning right through it nonstop. But with that, this is going to be the end of the episode. So we're going to give everybody a chance to plug what else they've got going on. So, Greg, here it is, the month of November. Tell people where they can find you on the social media machines, and anything that you'd like to plug about your other shows here at Place to Be Nation.
Absolutely, Russell. I can be found on the Twitter machine at gphillips8652. That is not my sector number, of course, but just a number that I randomly chose based on factors that I shan't discuss here. But here in November, we are just coming out of Walking Dead month, which is something that we're committed to finishing, even because we started it, and by God, we're going to finish it.
Poor Nick.
And so we have tortured Nick enough for the month of October, and we're moving on to torturing Nick in the month of November, because this month we've got a very special episode of our new show, Fix It or Nix It, which is going to be featuring the Josh Trank Fantastic Four movie.
Bless you.
So be on the lookout for that. I've never seen it, and I hope that I'm prepared. We're planning a Long Book Hunters episode on a book that Todd actually recommended to us long ago called The Golden Age by James Robinson.
Oh, my gosh. Speaking of Green Lantern, this is one of the all-time Golden Age Green Lantern stories.
Alan Scott, my friends. And
big guy.
Yes, absolutely. We've got Off the Page about the rather unique 1974 Wonder Woman movie that's on DC Universe. And we've got a countdown of the worst costumes of all time in comics. A lot of contenders there, guys. And
Guy Gardner Warrior's got to be in that one.
And we're gonna wrap up the month with probably having we haven't really set our panel yet, but we're gonna have a giant size panel to do an Arrow retrospective, getting ready for the last episodes of Arrow coming up right around the corner, and we're gonna have a bunch of folks on that are fans of the show to talk about the their memories of this you know, now classic DC Comics show. So anyway, thanks for giving me a chance to plug all that. I know it's a lot, but it's all to build up to what will be Arrow month in December as the CW's flagship show comes to an end.
Something to look forward to there as a huge Arrow fan myself. So hope to hear more about that in the coming days. Now, of course, you can find me on the old Twitter and Instagram machine at Russell_Sellers, same username for both. It's just a whole bunch of posts about comics and, of course, plugging the show. So if you enjoy that sort of thing, definitely give me a follow. And, of course, if you'll come back over the next 3 weeks, we're going to be talking more Green Lantern. Next week's show is going to be all about the Four Corpsmen. We're going to be looking at the origin issues of Hal Jordan, Guy Gardner, John Stewart, and Kyle Rayner, and discussing which ones we think are really great, which ones have aged well, which ones have maybe not so much. And, of course, we're going to see if we can't correlate the Four Corpsmen to the Four Horsemen of pro wrestling fame. So who's who in the four? You'll just have to listen to find out who we selected. Now, Todd, tell the folks what else we got going on and where they can find you on the old social media machines.
Yeah, what else do we have going on? Well, we meaning DC for you here in Green Lantern Month?
Sure.
Well, we have the Four Horsemen / Four Corpsmen debate, and we have a great Green Lantern comic to read through as well, right?
We have the first episode of Green Lantern,
the animated series. Sorry.
Yes.
I was getting Flash Month and Green Lantern Month mistaken. You understand I'm old, and this happens more often than
but,
you know.
But you are
where my pants are half the time.
You know, once I get to the age where I don't have to worry about where my pants are anymore, then life has just reached a whole new level of bliss.
Well, I am happy, but it has nothing to do with my pants. Anyway, so we are doing great stuff here on DC4U. Myself, I'm looking to get Conversation Comics back up and running. And if you were interested in my hot takes on the Sacramento Kings. Follow me on Twitter at Todd Weber Guitar. That's right, Todd Weber Guitar. Usually nothing to do about guitars, but so be it.
But he does have some pretty green ones that you guys should check out on his Instagram.
I do. Follow me. It is a protected account, so you have to get permission to follow me on Guitars of Green.
But I do. I love your green guitars, man. I think that's a good theme for yours. I wish I was that committed to my guitar craft. But I haven't been for some time. But anyway, folks, that's our show for this week. We hope you've enjoyed learning all about DC or about Green Lantern Rebirth. I keep saying DC Rebirth because that was also a really great Geoff Johns book that you should also check out on the DC Universe app. And, of course, go listen to the Hard Traveling Fanboys, listen to the Marvel Age podcast, and all the other great shows here on the Pop Feed that you're going to be hearing all about in the live read in just a minute. And we will see you next time.
DC for you.
DC for you.